Picture a young woman who has never ventured beyond the medieval castle that shadows her small English town. Now imagine her becoming the sole lifeline for a man who once traveled the world, but now wants nothing more than to end his existence. This is the heart of a story that has captivated over 14 million readers worldwide, sparked fierce debates about autonomy and dignity, and left audiences sobbing in theaters across the globe. What makes this tale so devastating and so necessary is how it refuses easy answers. Instead, it asks, what makes life worth living, and who gets to decide? Louisa Clark measures her world in 158 steps, the exact distance from her bus stop to home in Stortfold. At 26, she's never needed more space. Her universe consists of the Buttered Bun Cafe, where she knows everyone's usual order, her childhood bedroom shared with her sister, and her boyfriend Patrick's obsessive triathlon training. When the cafe closes, Louisa's carefully contained life threatens to collapse. After disastrous job attempts at a chicken processing factory and tricking elderly people into switching energy suppliers, she reluctantly accepts a position as caregiver to Will Traynor. Will's life once exploded with possibility. A high-powered London financier who conquered mountains and collected experiences, he embodied everything Louisa is not: adventurous, cultured, fearless. Then a motorcycle struck him 2 years ago. Now quadriplegic, Will can't brush his own teeth. Their first meeting sets the tone. Will greets her with horrifying facial contortions and blood-curdling groans, only to reveal it's an act designed to unsettle her. His message is clear. He doesn't want her cheerfulness, her pity, or her presence. Everything changes when Louisa overhears a devastating conversation. Will has an appointment at Dignitas in 6 months, the exact length of her contract. After a previous suicide attempt, his parents made a deal: give them 6 months to change his mind. Louisa isn't just a caregiver, she's an unwitting participant in a desperate rescue mission. Though she considers quitting, her father's job loss makes her income essential. With her sister Trima's encouragement, she develops a new mission: fill Will's remaining months with experiences that might reconnect him with joy. Her first attempt, a day at the horse races, crashes spectacularly. Will reveals he's always hated horse racing. "You decided for me," he tells her bitterly, just like everyone who thinks they know what's best for the poor cripple. The failed outing teaches Louisa a crucial lesson. Truly helping Will means seeing him as an individual with his own preferences, not a project to be fixed. The turning point arrives during Will's hospitalization for pneumonia. Louisa stays through long nights of labored breathing, reading novels and poetry, sometimes just talking when his eyes grow too tired. When he returns home, something has shifted. Will discovers Louisa's remarkably limited life. She's never watched foreign films, visited major galleries, or traveled beyond their town. "You are the most terrible snob, Clark," he tells her when she resists attending a classical concert. "Just because something's not to your taste doesn't mean it's not good." When she admits feeling uncomfortable, Will delivers a sobering truth: at least you can change how you appear to them. The concert becomes Louisa's revelation. Beethoven's Symphony No. 5 flows through her physically, stirring unexpected emotions. She watches Will's face transform in the dim light, temporarily freed from physical constraints. She recognizes how limited her perspective has been. Meanwhile, Louisa draws Will from his shell, bringing color back into his existence. She feeds him without making it a chore, cuts his hair and shaves his beard, experiencing unexpected intimacy that leaves her unbalanced. Most importantly, she makes him laugh, deep, genuine laughter his mother notes he hasn't done in years. During an after-hours castle visit, Will challenges Louisa to enter the maze alone. She collapses in panic, revealing her secret. Years earlier, drunk in that maze, she was sexually assaulted by a group of men. Their laughter and humiliation have haunted her since, causing her to cancel her Australia plans and shrink her life to avoid further risk. Will listens without judgment. It wasn't your fault. You don't have to let that night be the thing that defines you. For the first time, Louisa feels the guilt and fear that have constrained her life beginning to lift. In return, Will shares his own fears, his claustrophobia in the wheelchair, his dread of worsening, and the exhaustion of pretending to look on the bright side. This vulnerability transforms the relationship from reluctant caregiver and resentful patient to something deeper. As Louisa's feelings intensify, her relationship with Patrick deteriorates. While Patrick obsesses over protein shakes and triathlon training, Will encourages Louisa to explore films, music, and literature. When Patrick dismissively calls Will just a cripple, Louisa realizes how profoundly he misunderstands human connection. At Will's ex-girlfriend Alicia's wedding, he displays remarkable grace, particularly with Mary Rawlinson, an elderly former MP who treats him as an equal without awkward pity. During the reception, Louisa impulsively asks Will to dance. She perches on his lap, arms wrapped around his neck, while he maneuvers his chair in small circles under shimmering mirror balls. In this intimate moment, Will confesses, "Sometimes, Clark, you are pretty much the only thing that makes me want to get up in the morning." This sparks Louisa's most ambitious plan, a trip to Mauritius to reignite Will's passion for life. When Patrick delivers an ultimatum, Louisa realizes her heart has already decided. But cruel timing intervenes when Will contracts severe pneumonia just days before departure. In a last-ditch effort, Louisa confesses her love and desire to build a future together. Though visibly moved, Will gently explains that his love for her is precisely why he can't continue. "I don't want you to miss all the things someone else could give you," he tells her. "I don't want you to look at me one day and feel even the slightest regret." When Camilla calls, Louisa defies her mother's ultimatum and flies to Switzerland with her father's secretly provided credit card. The Dignitas Clinic is jarringly ordinary, a plain house in an industrial estate. Alone with Will, Louisa climbs onto the bed beside him, making no attempts to change his mind. Instead, she fills their final moments with memories, calling it the best 6 months of my entire life. Will agrees, words carrying both joy and heartbreak. In the epilogue, Louisa sits in Paris, opening Will's posthumous letter. He has left her enough money to purchase a home and fund her education. "I'm giving you this because there is not much that makes me happy anymore, but you do," he writes, urging her to live boldly and refuse to settle for less than extraordinary. After reading multiple times, Louisa wipes away her tears and heads toward the perfumery Will recommended, with the whole of Paris beyond, beckoning her forward. The story concludes not with an ending, but with a beginning, Louisa's first steps into a life expanded by love's transformative power.